And I have with me on the line Rabbi Galperin.
Good morning, Ilan.
Good morning, Rabbi. How are you?
I am doing wonderful, Baruch Hashem.
That's great.
Thank God.
So, Parshat Noach.
Parshat Noach is a beautiful, absolutely beautiful Torah portion with so many different lessons. And the kids love it because it's such a beautiful story.
It's definitely a beautiful story, and I remember myself as a kid fascinated from that story.
Absolutely,
you have animals, you have water, you even have a drunk one.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so let's start.
Yeah, so God instructs Noah, the only righteous man in the world that was consumed by violence and corruption, to build a large wooden table, large oak. Ark, sorry, which is coated with in and without with pitch, in other words, to be able to hold that it should be good, and a great flood. God says is going to come, is going to wipe up all the people from the face of the earth, but the ark will be the only one that will float upon the water and shelter Noah and his wives and families and the children and the animals. And rain falls for 40 days and nights. And the water goes, and the ark finally settles on Mount Ararat, and from there Noah opens his window and dispatches a raven and a series of doves to see if the water has really, really receded, and when the ground is totally dry, then he can go out and repopulate the world.
Yeah.
And obviously then Noah builds an ark, an altar, to say thank you to God for saving him, and set the rainbow as a testimony of his new covenant with God. And that's why, you know, we see a rainbow till today. It shows the fact is that God still remembers, and he's not going to send another flood that he did then. And Noah plants a vineyard and becomes drunk on its produce. And two of Noah's sons, Shem and Yapheth, are blessed for covering up their father's nakedness, while the third son, Ham, is being punished for taking advantage of that.
Yeah.
And so we see that at the end of the Torah portion, of this week's Torah portion, concludes with the chronologically of the 10 generations from Noah to Abram, which was then later changed to Abraham. And the later journeys of from the birthplace all the way down to the land of Canaan, to the land of Canaan.
Yeah.
Now the Torah records that Noah was a righteous man, and then it adds as well as almost as basically a throwaway line, and it says, as I quote, for his time. Now, faint praise it may be, and the commentators may well try to justify this thinly disguised put down. However, it is astonishing how much scholarship has been devoted throughout the ages to explain in detail the character flaws which might explain the less than fulsome description of Noah's righteousness. Because if Noah was such a righteous man, the Torah should have said that Noah was a righteous man. Period.
Yeah.
The Torah doesn't say that Noah was a righteous man for his time. What does that mean?
That is relatively. He was, but with drinking problem. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, then they didn't have the AA, Anonymous.
Yeah.
You know, so he couldn't really turn to anyone to help. There was no one else in the world besides him and his people on his favor.
That's how it is when you're one of the first.
That's right. So there are some sages that explain that Noah deserved center because he was preoccupied with saving himself and his family, with that result that he ignored the needs of others. And a subtly different reason given is that he convinced of the hopelessness of the situation, Noah neglected to pray for the salvation of the rest of the world. So he was worrying about himself. Another possible explanation is that he talks about his lack of faith. So it's surprising that we should go out of our way to highlight anyone's failings, let alone as complicated as the character as Noah. We should praise Noah for the fact that he tried to save the world, warn them, built the earth. It took him many years to build the ark. And the reason for that was that people should ask and he should forewarn them, you better change your ways or else this is what's going to happen. Try and imagine, you know, the stresses he would have been subjugated to on a daily basis. Noah was the only man of faith living in a deprived world, full of wickedness. He devoted a good chunk of his life to single-handedly building an ark on God's command. God told him, he did it, all while suffering threats and humiliation from the onlookers. He was, you know, directly responsible for, you know, the propagation of plant and animal life after the flood. He had the strength and confidence to pick up the tangled remnants of existence and start rebuilding the world all over again. And yet, Noah may well have spent every waking moment of a long and honorable life devoted to God. And yet the Torah still records that more could have been done. There is a subtle but crucial distinction between, you know, dedicating oneself to God's task and dedicating oneself to God. You can be dedicated to God's task that He wants you to do. You might not be getting dedicated to God Himself. Now, you know, there was the fifth Chabad Rebbe, Rabbi Sholem Dover, who I'm actually named after. He attended a conference of rabbis, which had been convened by the Russian government in their efforts to ram through massive changes to the traditional Jewish educational system. Now, at the risk of their lives and liberty, the rabbis worked passionately and collectively to protect our common heritage. As after the meeting broke up, a rabbi, Rav Chaim of Brisk, came to say farewell to the Rebbe and discovered him sitting in the hotel room, overcome with tears. And he asked, and he says, "Why are you weeping? You did absolutely everything within your power. Why are you crying?" So he answers him, "Maybe so, but after all that, we did not succeed in spoiling their plan." Now, if you view yourself as an employee of God with a job to do, as long as you put in the maximum effort while acquitting yourself honorably and responsibly, then even if you fail, you can still sleep calmly at night. However, if one is less concerned with one's personal scorecard and instead focuses purely on God's purposes and desires, then one can never surrender nor relax, no matter the difficulties that come up and that challenge him. So when Noah assessed the situation and recognized that his prayers would not improve the situation, did that idea that he knew now that he did everything that he could, was that an excuse for him from trying again and again? Obviously, no. He should have done even more. Now, certainly no blame can be directed at Noah for the fact that he alone was saved. But we must never make peace with a system where there are many people who are lost and the few are saved. You know, if you think about it, who among us can honestly state that they have exhausted every option, explored every path on our long, long mission to save the world? And if the world stubbornly refuses to be changed, the question is, does that excuse me from continuing to try? Noah did the best he possibly could under the circumstances that he had. But the lesson the Torah would want us to learn is that as long as another person is in physical or spiritual danger, we must not accept the inevitability of faith and content ourselves with self-preservation. But we must try again, and try again, risking our life and soul to help save the world. So it is a nice thing to work hard. Noah worked extremely hard. But it was at that time, that's why the Torah said that he was a righteous man for his time.
Yeah.
But he should have done more. So Noah was a very good man. Noah was a very big tzaddik. But at a certain part in time, he was a little bit, distracted, a little bit disappointed that what he was trying to do, no one was taking that to heart. No one took it seriously. So he gave up a little bit. Our job is, even though we're in a community, and even though people might not be willing to accept us now, or even though people might not want to hear of the holiness, of the ideas of Torah and godliness, of humanity, of spirituality, but we need to continue trying, and we need to continue doing. We can never be satisfied at the level that we're holding. We have to always want more, not only in our generation, want more that our children have more in their generation. It doesn't stop only in our time. It is for all the time, and that's what this week's Torah portion wants us to learn from the great person of Noah, that even in his greatness, there was still some little things that he could have improved.
That's a nice parasha.
Absolutely. You know, this whole book of Bereshit,
yeah.
Okay, it's got the beautiful stories that we're going to talk about next week, about Lech Lecha, as Abram leaving his house, and then Sarah, the life of Sarah, and then the Akedat Yitzchak, the sacrifice of Isaac, and going down to Egypt and so on. There's beautiful stories that I encourage, you know, everyone, read them to your children. Let your kids hear these beautiful stories of the story. And out of all the Torah portions, out of all the five books of Moses, this is probably one of the most important. This is the one, everything's important, but this is the one that's the most, that the kids can,
visualize.
Yes, visualize and also relate to.
Yeah.
So that's the beautiful portions of this week.
And services for Shari Tzedek members?
Services is 6:30 Friday evening, as the time is moving slowly down, and 9:30 Saturday morning, and 8:15 Sunday morning, followed by breakfast. And we have services Monday and Thursday in the Paris House in the JCC, 7:15 every morning. And if anyone that needs to be by work, we're done at 8 o'clock on the button, so everyone can go straight to work. So I encourage everyone to come and help make dominion and start your day off right.
That's good. So Shabbat Shalom, Rabbi.
Thank you. You too. It should be a peaceful Shabbat, a restful Shabbat, and we'll talk next week, God willing.
Thank you.
Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.